ado, I'm going to introduce Harman, who is going to be talking to us all about the Serendip, the yacht, and sailing it on solar. So over to you, Harman. Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah. Okay, sound okay? Also in the back? René, you can hear me? Good. Okay, my name is Harman, and I'd like to introduce you to Serendip, which is this ship. It is an inland cargo barge. It measures some 42 meters long, 6.6 wide. It was built in 1995 as one of the last riveted ships built in the Netherlands. And we bought it as a solution for a space that was sold to a project developer instead of to a community of artists and happy tinkerers and hackers. That's another story that I will not tell today. But we needed the space. We found the ship. And this is what the inside looks like, or looked like, when we bought it. And it used to be sailing dry cargo, like rolls of steel or heaps of corn or heavy equipment, all kinds of stuff. And now it looks like this. There's a theater on board and a labyrinth that Diana and I have been building to accommodate our artwork. And what do? We make interactive installations that are rooted in complex systems theory and make them into playful contraptions that combine science and art. And this is something about population dynamics. This is one about sea level rise. And it is like a playful science and art playground. If you haven't seen it yet, please visit us this afternoon or tomorrow afternoon. The labyrinth will be open to explore. And we call ourselves Spullenmannen, for those who understand Dutch. We work with all kinds of leftovers from industrial society that we repurpose and make into a scenography for a theater or an interactive installation, etc. And so we have this floating playground now, and the Netherlands has a lot of waterways, so we can sail it almost anywhere except for Apeldoorn, which doesn't have a proper waterway and a proper harbor, but actually also to most of Europe. There's an extensive network of waterways, and that's pretty cool. And so we have started like organizing our own festivals that are sailing. We now visit Y, we visited MCH before. We almost made it to the Maker Days in Eindhoven, but we will probably do that next time. And we have started building like an infrastructure for sailing, not cargo, but culture instead. And repurpose this vast network that in the old days used to bring in new knowledge, new information, new culture, and revive that function again. And we by now know a number of other ships that are slowly pooling together and becoming into a true fleet for, well, cool stuff to do. Okay, and shipping actually is the most efficient means of transport, because you have very little resistance and it is very efficient to propel a ship, in a sense. And so we can move this large playground. We do it all with leftovers from society, so we feel pretty cool about that. Until you go to the gas station. And if you go to a gas station with your car, you usually set off the climate by some 60 liters at a time, but the ship can hold 6,000 liters. And that's not so very cool. And so what to do if you bring a message about sustainability, because a lot of these complex systems eventually point towards, hey guys, smarten up and we should do something about climate change, etc. And burning some 20 liters, a full jerrycan of a fossil per hour when you sail. That's not a cool thing to do. And every time I'm at the steering wheel, I have this image in my mind. Okay, what I'm doing now is just pouring out a jerrycan of fossil and set it to fire just to move this bloody ship. Okay, so What solution can we think of, knowing that we have left only about 3 years of carbon budget to stay under 1.5 degrees climate change? Can we seal this thing sustainably? Or do we have to put ourselves out of business, to be honest? Okay, and so the challenge is how to move about 120 tons over water with a low footprint and ideally repurposing old gear that we found somewhere. So that's the challenge that we set ourselves. And there is a solution for that, and actually it's a solution that made the Netherlands a world power one day. And this is the solution that you have to seal a lot of cargo, a lot of weight, with a very low footprint, and it's really efficient. And actually, there's modern variants of that being built right now. So this is a ship that sails, a cargo ship, much bigger sails. But to be honest, it is wind-assisted power. It takes off about 30% of what they would otherwise use in fossil. So it's not the ideal solution yet. There's another solution using kites. And this is in development also. There's just minor problem if you have an inland say vessel. There's a lot of bridges in the Netherlands. And neither the kite nor the sails would work as you would want. So back to history, there was a solution for that as well. This was it. For a long time, boats were being pulled by hand by burlocks. And there's another one. It was kids' labor, women's labor. And it didn't go very fast, but it worked. And actually, back in the days, it served like earning money for the people who owned the boat. Well, we did pull the ship, and our ship is much bigger than the ship that we are talking in this time of history. But you can pull it by hand. And you can pull some 2 kilometers per hour into the ship. So, of course, that's relative to the speed of the water. Yeah. So the rain, you won't stand a chance. Okay, so then there have been other historical solutions to that. And if you don't know Low Tech Magazine, look it up immediately. It's a wonderful website documenting a lot of low tech from the past that is really useful still today. And it documented like electric trains to propel ships. And all these sidetracks have been removed by now because we entered the fossil fuel era. But this has been there as a solution. And there were even trolley boats. So, wonderful idea. But I don't think we can start. We may start an infrastructure for sailing culture, but starting an infrastructure yourself for like the lines that you need to power ships throughout the Netherlands, okay, not for us. But then there's a new development, of course, and that's solar. So you have the hatches covering the ship, and nowadays solar hatches are being produced. So maybe we can do it solar, using PV power to propel the ship. And when you look into this, you find out that this looks really cool, but actually this is not used for propelling the ship. It's used for powering the refrigerator on board. So when the ship is moored, all the facilities in the housing in the ship are, well, powered with solar, but not the ship itself. Too bad. But then again, these things are getting cheaper and cheaper. And actually, you get them for free by now. If you go secondhand, people upgrade their systems, and we got handed over some solar panels, and we have it on the roof right now, so we can run the installations, the museum, the theater, carbon neutral at this moment. So that's nice already, but we want to step up, okay? And then there are solutions for propelling a ship electrically. This ship is sailing in the Netherlands right now, and it ships beer from the Heineken brewery to a distribution center, and you see the two blue containers with the green stripes on it. Those are the batteries. So those are stacked with, I don't know, lithium or something else. And when they arrive in the harbor, first thing happens is they change the batteries. Okay, that's a solution, but again, that requires a massive infrastructure for having all these containers at several places and have it ready, and you have to accommodate them in the hold of your ship, which is not nice for our ship. So, okay, what do we do? But then again, we have a rather unique case as compared to most of these inland cargo ships. We essentially don't ship cargo, so we're much lighter than a heavy loaded cargo ship. We do not sail on a daily basis. We go to festivals and we stay there for a week, maybe 2 weeks, and we could use this time to charge a battery and then harvest the power ourselves for then be sailing for maybe a couple of hours or maybe one day. So this ratio becomes different than it is for a proper cargo ship. And then we sail mostly in summer because in winter it's just too cold on board to welcome any audience that would stay very long. So our season is a season when the sun is out. So maybe there's a case. Well, this is the current setup that we have. This is a Detroit diesel machine. It's a two-stroke diesel engine that accommodates some 370 horsepower. That is like 240 kilowatt, or no, 270 kilowatts. And there's a clutch, twin disc clutch, that transfers this rotation from the engine to the propeller shaft. And the propeller shaft turns at about 200 revolutions per minute. And this is a number to keep in mind, 200 RPM. And then you dive a little bit into the theory of propelling ships, and you find this graph and this relationship. And probably you know that if you drive a car, the relationship between the speed that you make and the power you need to go there is a power relationship. But for ships, it's a cube relationship. So that makes for a horrible curve. If you want to sail twice as fast, you need 8 times the amount of power to put into the propeller. And this explains why our ship, which weighs 120 tons, you can pull it by hand, but only up to about 2 kilometers per hour, and then this curve kicks in, and you will need the full 370 horses on board to yank it up to 18 kilometers per hour max. So that's to give you a feel about what we're up to. So, but then if we know we achieve this 18 kilometers per hour using this 270 kilowatts or 370 horsepower, we can make the calculation and derive the formulas we need to know where on this curve we are. If we put in a certain amount of power, how fast will we go? Or if we want to achieve a certain speed, how much power do we need? So if we want to sail 12.5 kilometers per hour, which is very slow on a bike, but which is a nice, okay-ish speed for us, then you would need about 90 kilowatts continuous power. And so what we did is we did a measurement. One journey we made to the north of the Netherlands, we tried to sail a constant speed as good as we could. And we measured the amount of fuel that we used. And then we did some assumptions on the efficiency of the motor. And we looked up the energy content of diesel fuel. And then you can do the calculation and say, okay, if we sail for 16 hours, about 200 kilometers, and we have a rather efficient two-stroke engine that is like 47% efficient, according to Wikipedia, then amazingly, you end up at a similar number, some 88 kilowatts of power that we should have used. So that gives us some trust in the formula and in the first approach that we took. But then, and then we can do some calculations, so then we would know that if we would like to achieve 6 kilometers per hour, we would need 10 kilowatt. Double it, you go to 8 kilowatt, and in between some 9 kilometers, you need 34 kilowatts. And then you delve a bit deeper into the theory of ship hull resistance and all this. It becomes horribly complicated. And there's entire PhDs written about this alone. But basically it boils down to that there are several factors that contribute to the resistance that you meet as a ship. Of course, there's wind resistance as well that you would also have with a car. There is the draught resistance in the water that goes to with this cube relationship. But there's also something that's called the wave-making resistance. Depending on how fast your ship sails, it will start making waves. And making waves costs energy. So under a certain threshold, you can sail really smooth, and then at a certain moment you find that you start making waves at the bow or the stern of the ship or both of them, and this will cost you. So the essential question for us is, how does this curve look like for our specific ship? Because it depends a lot on the specific shape of the hull that you have. When these waves start kicking in, and our ship actually is a rather smooth sailing efficient ship, we are being told by the former owner and other skippers that we know by now. So maybe we can, well, take advantage of that. But we don't know it. We need to measure it. And our ship lacked measurement of the fuel uptake. So we installed two flow meters in the fuel lines, in the diesel line and the return line, and start measuring, which is a bit finicky. And this is the result that we got, as good as we got it. But it's really hard to discriminate or find a smooth curve that will tell you anything about this wave making resistance from this graph. So that was a bit of a bummer. But it did confirm that this overall relationship that it should roughly meet was right. And even also in this plot, you can see that about 12.5 kilometers per hour would require some 90 kilowatts. So gives us a bit more reassurance that we are right on that side. Okay, so what do? We go to the second-hand market, Marktplaats in the Netherlands, and we find an electric motor from a Kia Niro. And you will find that there's a marketplace for scrapped or troubled EVs by now, and you can find all the components second-hand. And that's rather convenient. And this little block, I have to tell, like the original motor in our ship was like a two-story machine that was like this long, this high, this wide. The engine that we have now is about this size, and this block is like this size, and according to specs, it can produce 200 horsepowers. So imagine 200 horses crammed into this little block of aluminium. And so that is about 150 kilowatts. So that is, yeah, seahorses. Thank you. So that's pretty powerful. And it's almost the amount of power that the original motor had. And actually, you never use this full amount of power from any engine, usually because you only need it with extreme maneuvering. And like a cruising speed, an average speed would, well, require some between 30 and 90 kilowatts, which is well below the limits of this motor. Then we find another nice device, an inverter from a Toyota Prius. And this is robust technology that is well tested, and especially the second generation is on the second-hand market for next to nothing. So for 100 euros, we bought this one from the UK. And these have the advantage over other inverters from other cars that the IGBTs that are in there can handle high voltage. So these go up to about 600 volts, which comes in handy later in the talk. Okay, and then we found out there's this really cool community called Open Inverter, and they're working on converting cars to electric, from fossil to electric, since 2008. And it's Johannes Hübner who started it and gathered a lot of other geeks. And I was looking for presentations they gave at other hacker camps. I couldn't find it so far. So if anyone can help me out, let me know. I should put a link into the notes later on. But they created a wonderful piece of hardware that can control an electric motor from an electric vehicle and take in the signal from the resolvers that in there and make you break free from the proprietary hardware that you would otherwise need to drive a motor like this. And you can use it to mix and match inverters and motors from different scrapped cars, and it works. And we got this to work on our test bench, and it's really, yeah, awesome that that startup appeared not to be so hard. And it's really well documented. They have a lot of videos on YouTube explaining you how these type of motors work, how these inverters work, all the equations go in there. The hardware is open source. The software is open source. Amazing project. So we have some equipment. And except from the control board, we can find it secondhand. Really cool. Then we go look into the specs of this Kia Niro. And you can see the 200 horsepower there somewhere. But also you see that its preferred speed is about 3,800 RPM, which is a tiny bit more than the 200 RPM that our propeller shaft likes to have. Actually, I don't know if we would manage to yank up the propeller to 3,000 RPM. I don't know what the ship would do by then. Basically, I don't want to know. So we need to think of a trick there. And one solution could be to use a high-speed propeller and not use the existing propeller on the ship. And again, history gives us a clue, because in the old days, when ships were first motorized, they had something that in Dutch is called a lamme arm. I didn't find an English translation for that. So a loose arm that you would just throw overboard, and it has a separate motor on the deck, and you have a rather small propeller, so you could make it into a high-speed propeller. Can be done. In Asia, they made this into a craft of its own. They just fit an entire car engine on the back of a boat and put a shaft with a high-speed propeller onto it and make it into a sturdy, well, big-ass outboard motor. Outboard motor. Another solution could be to just add an extra propeller that we can lower in the at the bow of the ship and make it into a steering propeller that we could also sail with. And then we can also maybe put in this motor, have a high-speed propeller and work it out. So this might give an avenue that we can follow. And then we found this wonderful graph. And this solved a lot of our troubles, or made us ease. What you see here is the motor efficiency contours at a certain power. And you see that on the low axis is the speed. On the vertical axis is the torque that it has. And you can see that there's this optimum with the dark red color, where the engine is most efficient. And all these electric motors have efficiencies of, well, up in the 90%. 95, 97% is not an exception. Way better than these fossil machines do. But we found out that actually, if you go to much lower revolutions per minute, they don't fall off that fast. They're still pretty stay pretty efficient, and they have a lot of torque if you want to start them going. So maybe we don't need to go to 3000 plus RPM. Maybe we can drive it directly and just use it out of bandwidth, out of spec, in the low revolution range to try it out with 200 RPM. Something we could do. And there's another one. You can find many of these curves online. They also exist for not the motors but for the inverters, because they also have these curves, of course, and you have to combine them. Unfortunately, we couldn't find them for our inverter and our motor, but we suspect that it should be something similar to this. So that's a guess. Okay, so then we might know where to go with the propulsion. But now the power part of affairs. So our roof consists of hatches that we could cover in PV panels. And we have like 130 square meters. And if we put in second-hand panels, which are basically for free, almost for free nowadays, they don't yield as much as brand new panels would do, but they're still pretty decent and they're for free. So let's use them and use that number for a calculation, knowing that if we would have a workable setup, we could step up by fitting it with more modern paddles later on. And so if we do that, we calculate that we have a theoretical capacity of some 80 kilowatts peak. So then the main question is, how fast would the ship sail, putting that amount of energy into motor? And it, if we use this equation that we gained some trust in, but we don't know for sure, we might achieve some 7.5 kilometers per hour, which is not terribly fast. Actually, it's a snail's pace for being at the wheel. But then again, it's faster than the legally required minimum speed that you have to sail to be able to be allowed on the waterways, which is 6 kilometers per hour. And it does allow you to sail upstream also on the Rhine. So, not too bad, basically. And maybe our specific hull shape will help us and we'll go faster. There's a lot of assumptions that we made and that we will know for sure only if we do it in practice. So, this is our roadmap. We first want to make a proof of concept, see if it works, if we can crank the propeller at all. And then we should test the sailing behavior. And actually, there's a number of steps in between. So the motor controller, we're covered. We can run the motor. If you're interested to see it, please visit us on the ship tomorrow morning. We'll have a setup and make it work for you. So you can see the open inverter setup, use the Prius inverter and the Kia motor, and we can have a throttle so you can speed it forward and backward, and that works perfectly fine. And then we have to do some transmission, maybe or maybe not. We can try it directly and see if it holds at 200 RPM. But if not, we also have the transmission from the Kia Niro. And this has a 1 in 10 reduction of the speed. So you get from this 3000 to 300 RPM, which is fairly reasonable. But it adds another problem because it's integrated with a differential. So then we have two shafts, two axles that we have to transmit to the propeller axle. So we are in the process of solving that. I'll show you an image later on. We need some cooling because both the inverter and the motor use water cooling. But hey, this is the least of our problems. We have a massive cooling surface, so we will work something out there. And we will first use it with a lab supply. So the test bench setup you will see tomorrow just takes in 12 volts and the thing turns. It should theoretically go up to, in the range of 400, 500, 600 volts. We haven't tried it yet. But therein lies also the test that we can do without having to do the solar panels first. We have a genset on board, a generator, that produces some 15 kVA in electric power. What we could do is rectify what comes out of the generator and feed it into the inverter, which has, remember, these IGBTs that can withstand up to 600 volts. If you rectify three-phase power, you get up to some 550. So the IGBTs should hold. The motor is designed for some 350 volts, so it's a bit of a guess if it would stay up to 500 plus volts. But then again, if you cool well enough, we might take the gamble and it might hold out. But if this all works out, then by chance, the generator we have on board produces just about as much power than the entire top covered in solar powers would do. So then we can do a proper test of the sailing behavior and find out whether it makes sense to do the investment in getting the solar panels and installing them on the roof. So that will be the second stage that we defined. And so, if we can do that, we know it's a safe bet to start investing in solar panels. Take note that we didn't talk batteries so far. So, this would allow us to sell solar directly without having batteries on board. It would save us the investment in battery equipment. And battery equipment is the weakest link in the whole affair, because batteries degrade faster than solar panels do. You need all kind of conversion electronics, which is also vulnerable and more expensive. So we find this little slope that we can walk. First, try the cheap second-hand parts that we had on the test bench, provide a lab supply and see if it works. Then maybe add a small battery, then see if we can make the rectified generator work, then install the solar panels, and after that only we need to think about battery power. And then if the solar would bring us up to about 7 kilometers per hour, if we add some extra battery or use the generator after all, we might double the power that we have and get a convenient maybe 9 to 10 kilometers per hour. So that's the plan that we have. Latest status of affair is that we took apart this transmission, found the diff, removed all the inner gear wheels that are in there, and thought of a purpose axle that needs to be made that we can put in there and drive it directly from the last gear wheel that is in the transmission. And it seems not to be too hard. So we can do this 1 in 10 reduction and feel a bit better about these efficiency curves that these graphs show us about the motors and the inverter. So, there's one more thing that we haven't solved yet in our heads or on paper, and that's how to do the actual transmission. Should we use like a chain or some kind of a belt, a Vesnar or a Tandriem? I don't know how these things are called in English. If someone here has the knowledge about that, I'd love to have a talk. because that's the thing that we haven't found. We understood that in agriculture, all the tractors have this power takeoff axis, and there's a lot of second-hand gear also in all kinds of transmissions that we might repurpose for our goal of using second-hand gear to make this all work. But we're not expertise. We lack the expertise in that field. So anyone, please come. Thanks. Bell drives and cogwheels. Cool. Okay. So that's it. If you'd like to see the ship for yourself, we are here still for 2 days. You will find us on the map. In the mornings, we have the Fab Lab open. In the afternoons, the Labyrinth. Tonight, there will be a lot of talks on several cool projects that people did. And we will have the test bench set up working for you tomorrow morning. And I think the slides are on the lowest URL. And I think we have some space for questions. Thank you.
So you made a really cool talk and lots of research. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Though I have maybe a question or a remark on the solar power, because you lay it flat on the ship, so you won't get those 18 kilowatts, maybe you get less, 14, so you may have to recalculate that one. But all the other ones, really perfect research. And one remark about the batteries. Currently in the Netherlands, you could buy brand new batteries. Maybe for 1,000 euros, you get 16 kilowatt hours of battery capacity. So the prices are falling to the bottom. So that's my remarks on that talk.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Actually, it's even a bit worse than you mentioned, because we don't put it flat. We put it under a slight angle. So some of them will catch a bit more sun. Others will be even worse. And so we have to think about how to combine these in different strands. And, well, and one more thing about batteries. Size or weight are not an issue for us. Not at all. So we could think of a salt battery or some other new technologies, and we have plenty of space to accommodate that on board. So anyone who likes to experiment on that, well, we have your playground.
Yeah, thank you for a great, interesting talk. I saw you were considering batteries and a generator, but did you also consider fuel cells? Because fuel cells is another...
Yeah.
You could kind of burn all types of different fuels, depending on what type of... from hydrogen to ammonia to mirazuur to... Yeah. Whatever,
so definitely
plenty of possibilities.
Yeah, yeah, there are possibilities. I looked it up, and a flow battery, that's what you're talking about, I think. So we have the fuel cell and one tank of a certain, well, substance that holds some energy that goes through the fuel cell and makes electricity and gets into a different tank that you later have to recharge. This would actually be a fantastic idea to repurpose all the fuel distribution infrastructure over the whole world and use all these gas stations for doing like fuel cell type of stuff. But there's a good reason why this is not there yet, because all the solutions that have been well researched have a lot of drawbacks. So there's one that uses bromine, which is something you don't want to handle. Ammonia is not very nice as well. You have, of course, the hydrogen cells, but storing a lot of hydrogen in a car or ship comes with a lot of risk. So. And it frustrates me a lot. My background is that I studied chemistry, and I know how our bodies are using ATP and ADP to transport energy throughout our bodies, which is with harmless substances done in each of us. And it just frustrates me that I cannot find a fuel cell and a tank of ATP and let it go through the fuel cell, end up with ADP, and get electricity from it. Someone has to invent this.
Don't forget that you have lots of experience with handling poisonous stuff. I mean, the traditional fossil fuels are also not very nice. So you're experienced in that field.
Thank you.
Yes. Thanks for this great project and the talk about it. I had two comments. One you already addressed with the, like, you don't have to use lithium batteries in a chip. You can have a cell battery or any other chemical battery that uses liquids, which have a much higher lifetime, so they don't degrade that fast. They are large and bulky, but that's not your problem. The second comment is you thought about, like, powering the inverter directly from your generator. I don't know whether you have tried that yet, but depending on how old that inverter is, it might produce a much higher voltage if it's unloaded. So if you're driving at low speeds, you might not get like 500, 550, but 600 or 700 volts out of it. And typically, if you design an inverter, you select the IGBT voltage at least 20% higher than the maximum expected voltage, because water cooling doesn't help in that. It's like if you exceed the 600 volts, then you have a catastrophic breakdown in the IGBTs and you need a new inverter. So the water cooling helps if you want to drive more current out over it. But yeah, maybe check first with a multimeter what voltages you really see on your genset.
Definitely. We have to monitor a lot if we go that step. And there's another thing also with the solar. We will need a small battery to stabilize a lot of all the things that we need and make a low impedance. Well, yeah.
Great project, Harman. Good to see you again. I have a few remarks that you asked for. There are sodium flow batteries, or actually at least it's being worked on, so that sounds very much like what you want to do. Basically, you split sodium and chloride, and the chloride evaporates, so first time, don't inhale. But after that, you just basically change the concentration of sodium. Rather than passing sodium from cathode to anode and reversely, which is probably the kind of battery you meant when you said salt battery. As for the solar panels, have you considered taking advantage of reflection of the water by hanging them vertically or in another position? I don't know what it will bring, but it might be worthwhile. And then my question is, in what direction should we go for Serendip? Because, okay, Thank you.
Go west, young boy. No, thanks a lot. We have to talk later and get into the sodium business. and solar panels. We could cover the side of the ship with solar panels, but that would not come in very handy when sailing through locks, and it will ruin the ship or the solar panels.
Can you just clarify how to visit the ship in the small time remaining before the closure of the camp?
Yeah, you walk that direction, and then you get at the gate, and there's a sign saying Serendip, get out of the gate, and there will be signs guiding you to the ship. It's about 700 meter walk from the gate. Time. We will be open today until 11 at night or 12, and tomorrow from 10 to 6.
Yeah, if anyone hasn't seen the boat, do go and visit. It's the labyrinth is great fun. Seeing the experiments, great fun. The installations, it is just go straight down. You can't miss it. Just go on the main path, keep going until you get wet.
I forgot to wrap something in before I ask my short question. Urium is a very innocent storage vehicle for a lot of energy, and if you know urium because you pee it out when you break down proteins, it's harmless when it's dry. It's very stable. That might be a problem for you, but you can solve that, I'm sure. It's available en masse because it's used as a fertilizer. Don't go there because it's made from natural gas, but it will be a good experimentation ground. There is work on pretty efficient but experimental fuel cells for urium, and the storage capacity is very high per volume as well as per weight, I believe, but you couldn't care about that. So it's my favorite future storage mechanism, but I haven't seen it.
So for the next Hamburg camp, we will team up with Team Sanitation. And
cool. I'm going to ask, are you intending to keep the original engine on board for backup or take it out ultimately?
No, we are intending to keep it on board for a very mundane reason, because the engine is what keeps the ship certified. And also in it comes in handy emergency situations to be able to turn on like 370 horsepower and have that ready, but the certification goes with the engine, and we don't want to open that kind of worms and do that on our own.
How about the last or the next CCC camp?
Depends on where it is. If it is in Berlin again, we looked it up. There was a little harbor, inlet somewhere. We also found that it is about a full week of straight sailing. And if we go solar by then, it will be much longer because we will be going slower than we now do on average. So it could be a cool project to go there. But I think, honestly, that we should combine it with some stops on our way to or back, and have like kickoff events or places where you can go and have audience on board, and make it into a month of sailing. That's a longer project, because sailing to Berlin with 9 kilometers per hour back and forth for one event feels a bit stretching it. Depends maybe also on the budget that the camp is willing to pour into this, but
Shout out for contacts.
Okay.
For balance as well, we've had questions about just about every type of power source, but I need to ask as well, how would you feel about nuclear power? How about a small uranium reactor on board?
I have not looked into recent developments, but I believe there are a lot of developments on small nuclear power devices. But secondhand would be hard, and I think we will get into safety and environmental issues way quicker than we would do with any other solution at this moment.
Okay, so anyone watching the live stream with a secondhand reactor getting
contact. Yeah, yeah, please do. Will be interesting anyway, but
also for the if people have contacts at the CCC camp or suggestions around that, please get in contact.
And if you want to see the ship in your hometown, just contact us and see if we can work something out.
Cool. Brilliant. Any other questions? No? Okay. Well, that's super. Well, come to the UK as well. And thank you very much for a really entertaining talk. And do go and visit for anyone who hasn't. So, yeah, super. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.